I'm Russ White. This is MSU Today. Glad to be joined by Tim Stout, affectionately known as the Dean of Sports in Mid-Michigan, a longtime radio and TV broadcaster, and he's just passed 50 years in the broadcasting world. Tim, good to have you on the show again.
The problem with listening to 50, it just means you're old.
I agree, but you know.
You say that to Judd all the time. It just means you're old.
But there is something to be said for longevity, I guess. But Tim, just reflect a little bit on 50 years in this crazy business.
Well, you know, I went to Michigan State Journalism School, 4 years, 5 weeks, and I graduated in 71. And to this day, two or three of the journalism professors I had at Michigan State I thought were aces. I mean, they were absolutely impartial. They taught facts, report the facts and this and that. And I always thought I was going to be in writing because as a part-time job going through school, I was in sports information, and that seemed fascinating to me. And I worked for two Hall of Fame guys in Fred Stabley and Nick Vista in the press box that football is named after. Senior, his son and I are very close friends. And I thought it was fabulous. But, you know, the size of town this is, when you – as a kid, write for the weekly paper, a small-town guy, Fran Martin, owned a radio station. He wanted a local presence. He says, this is something you could do. And I went out there 50 years ago, twice a day, and I thought I died and went to heaven getting to do a little broadcast. And then, like anything else, when you meet someone else in the business, he or she will say to you, hey, did you know that job's open? And then the rest is you go apply and you have somebody help you. And that got to Channel 6 in 1969 and 70, and I did radio news with George Blaha. And then they needed an 11 o'clock television weatherman because the 6 o'clock weatherman, who was well-known, had a radio morning shift, and they didn't want him working 18 hours a day. So I went over there and begged for it. And in those days, it was a one-owner type of deal. It's not like today where these are conglomerates owned by 50 stations and are all unionized and everything else. Long story short, true story, he said, well, you have to audition. So I went to one of the grocery stores and bought one of those little 10-cent Dell books on You Too Can Know Weather. Went and took the audition. And this is in the days before the technology of weather is what it is today. If that would have been a technology thing, that would have been done. So he said, okay. And I said, the magical words were, you have nothing to lose by hiring because if you don't like, you don't have to pay me anything, which was magical, and you can find somebody else tomorrow, and that worked out. And then after I'd done it for a couple of nights, I said, now, you know, I'm doing this because I want to do the sports, and I guess so I did that for about, I always tell the weather guys, I said, you know, I did what you guys do. I can lie just like everybody else does on weather, too.
Well, Tim, you know, I'm sure technology is part of your answer, but how has this broadcasting and journalism industry changed the most over the years?
Well, the one thing that's changed the most is the technology. But you can say that about medicine, right. Yeah. Automotive, airplanes. Everything's changed over 50 years. I always thought the greatest impact in local television news was pre-cable, because if you wanted to watch television on the dinner table, you can go watch ABC, CBS, or NBC. Well, in this market, it was basically two stations. And even then, Michigan State's Channel 23, which was WMSB, Michigan State Broadcasting, split the day with Channel 10 NBC. That's a long time ago. But cable gave everybody options, and that was in 1979. That's when ESPN came about. And then I think the other one was high def. I remember the day 5 or 6 years ago, 7, whatever it was, they called us in and said, we're going high def, and we're the first one of the 40 great television stations that are going to try high def at WILX in Lansing. For the younger people on the staff, that was a no-brainer. That's just one more thing. They're computer savvy, tech savvy, digital savvy, just like our three boys who are now adults. For me, it was panic time because that was just learning something I wasn't used to. And let me tell you, on my days off, I came in with sympathetic employees and wrote down every single thing I had to do to learn how to produce and edit and so forth. And I got it. Let me tell you, every single day now, I call, can you come help? Can you come help? Can you come help? This is and we're talking about kids that are just out of college, and they all know it, but I've managed to survive. And I found out if you don't know it, don't sweat it out. Someone else can help you. So for what I have to do, I can do, and that's pretty much where it ends, too.
Now, Tim, where is it going? Because I hear you talk on your radio program a lot about ESPN losing. I think it's a mind-boggling, like a 500,000 subscribers every month.
Yeah.
People are cutting the cord. The young people seem to know how to find what they want for nothing. What's ahead for this business?
Well, I mean, I was just in New York City visiting. We have two of our three boys are in Manhattan, and the other one's in Cleveland. And I look at them and their friends and how they watch television, and none they got all. My oldest pays for some cable, but not a lot. But the others and their friends, they don't pay for anything, and they're watching a lot of TV on their iPhones for nothing. And some of the networks like ESPN allow for free live streaming. Well, the whole genesis of subscription television to pay for a lot of these Discovery and Arts and Entertainment and History and Smithsonian and on Harman Garden, all that, that they survive by subscribers who have to pay. This has been an endless issue in the industry, is should you go a la carte and be able to pay for what you want, or do you have to pay for everything, like your property tax? And to this point, you pay on a tier basis. An issue with this is the Big Ten Network moving forward. I mean, if the Big Ten Network can't keep getting money from everyone in pay TV, then that's going to obviously reduce the amount of money it can give the various schools. I mean, I think this is a huge question mark moving forward. There's going to be a new Big Ten commissioner in 16 months. He or she is going to have to deal with the brand new negotiations when the new Big Ten TV contract begins sometime in 2023. And I think it's a real long shot as to predict exactly whether or not that same amount of revenue, let alone more revenue, is going to be available then.
And Tim, if I'm correct, TV money funds most of college, if not professional athletics. So based on decreasing eyeballs or whatever, I mean, how does that affect perhaps athletics moving forward?
Well, the Big Ten just gave every Big Ten school, including Michigan and Michigan State, $51 million. Now, that's bowl money, network money, Big Ten money, but Michigan State got $51 million, which is less than half of its annual athletic budget. I mean, I think looking at Bill Beekman when he got this job, the first thing that he noticed right away was, how do we spend the money? Where do we get it? How do we allocate it? And so on and so forth. Michigan State has never had the biggest budget in college athletics, and it never will have. Michigan State's coaches generally don't get paid what they do at Ohio State and Michigan, just simply because those budgets are higher. They just have more means of revenue. I think all of them moving forward are going to have to hope and pray that not only does it stay at $51 million a year, but increases. And I think that's a long shot at this point. I mean, if you listen to guys like Mark Hollis and Greg Ianni leaving the athletic world of the colleges that they know well, I would say that they are dubious. Well, I mean, Greg Ianni was on the radio with me before he retired a couple of weeks ago and said, I'm like you. I don't think the system nationwide, the way it is now, is sustainable based on getting broadcast revenue at the level that it's at today.
So what happens then? I mean, and who buys tickets to sit in the stadium 20 years from now?
Well, I don't think there are 129 Division I schools that can. I mean, when I look at Eastern, Western, and Central, they're losing money in athletics hand over fist, and they're charging their general student population to help pay for that. Those schools, if you look at the recent reports, have enrollment issues dramatically from what they've had before, which clearly will filter down to athletics. Michigan and Michigan State still have high enrollment and growing enrollment. Assuming that that maintains itself, then I think they'll be the last ones in the food chain that are going to have to be, proficient at how they spend money. But the new president at Michigan State, later this year, when he or she looks at where athletics are, and if that president is well-versed in athletics, I would think that president is going to have to look long and hard at the future of paying the bills, not only for athletics, but certainly tuition for various schools, for programs, for buildings and all that. I mean, look, this is an issue for everyone moving forward, I think, in higher education in America. And athletics clearly is going to, in my opinion, is going to be affected too.
I'm talking with Lansing area broadcaster Tim Stout on MSU Today. And Tim, the Duke player Zion Williamson has sort of brought back to the surface the one-and-done rule. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's going to get eliminated by the NBA in 2022. This is not a college issue. This is an NBA issue. The NBA has been reluctant to take kids too young because they don't want teenagers with all that money flying around first class. That lifestyle is so different than the regimen of a college student, the way college players are today. But the reality of it is that there are a few players that the NBA now is going to be willing to take at a kid like his level that can help their business, who's good enough to compete and play. they're obviously going to have to deal with teenagers living in a new environment that can handle the lifestyle. I mean, I claim that there are a lot of teenagers that come into college sports that are highly recruited players. They've only been told how great they are through their high school lives. Then they come in and get into a different world collegiately where they're going to class and everything else. That's an adjustment in and of itself. So, you know, I come from the background era where you played through your senior year and then you just automatically were drafted or not, which was great for college sports. You know, times have changed, and obviously they've changed in basketball. And in the legal world that we live in, there are those representing underprivileged kids who are desperate to have families that get bills paid. I mean, I think Michigan State's had a number of basketball players who didn't want to leave school. But to do it and get paid, pay some family bills, and I certainly get that.
And, Tim, another topic we hear about in baseball is pace of play and pitch clocks, and the audience for viewing baseball is so much older now. What do you think about all that?
Well, I think baseball's at a crossroads. I mean, if you look in the stands on TV at any of these spring training games, take a look at what the average person, I mean, how old, what's the average fan in there? 70, 75, 80. Now, in Florida and Arizona, obviously there are a lot of retirees there. I mean, I think the commissioner of baseball today is looking at the state of the game and the demographics of those who pay the money to buy the tickets. And it's a challenge for the colleges and the NFL and the NBA and everybody else to find people that are willing to meet the salary level by paying to buy the tickets to go to the games and support it in the way that, you know, professional sports have been supported by the public through the years. And I think there are some challenges there, you know, as well. And in baseball, it's a slower game that appealed to a generation prior to the advent of the popularity of the NFL. And the hardcores are probably always going to stay with it, which is the nature of sports. But if you want to grow the sport to the younger generation, that's the challenge. And I think that's where, in baseball's case, that commissioner and some of those owners are concerned about pace of play.
And, Tim, a guy like Bryce Harper should take every dime somebody's willing to give him. But isn't there something wrong with a 13-year contract for $330 million? And what if, based on what we've talked about, the Phillies don't have the money to pay that 12th year or something?
Well, I mean, these teams used to be owned by, you know, the O'Malley family and the Bush family and so forth. This was their livelihood. And I was surprised. You know, it's one thing to pay Michael Jordan the money he made because every place he went, he sold the place out. He played every night and he played well. This guy got a 13-year deal, and he was a .249 hitter last year. And the argument with the staff here is, for that kind of money, I want Babe Ruth. And, you know, because I wasn't sure where these two top free agents were going to end up at what price level. I do think this, though. Of those 30 major league teams, the number of teams that can get into that kind of money are dramatically reduced simply because I think those owners just think we just simply can't afford it. The Harper thing that surprised me was not so much the amount of money, it was the length of the contract. None of those guys play at the rigors on their body, Miguel Cabrera being a prime example. They can't finish the thing out, but I don't know what the financial stake is of the guy who owns the Philadelphia Phillies or the company or whatever. They did sell some tickets initially after he signed, but I'll tell you, the pressure is on him to deliver for that kind of money. I think when you get into salaries that are this high, the pressure to produce and the risk involved for everyone escalates from where it currently is now. I always thought baseball was a game that people attended at the highest level where money was no object. Now, a family of four, you got to decide, are we going once a year? Where are we going to go? Because it's obviously a much bigger financial challenge maybe than what it was 50, 60 years ago.
And, Tim, we've talked about your 50 years in broadcasting. Does anything jump out, favorite moment? Or there's so much, obviously, but what stands out?
Well, every time I go to New York to see the boys, I'm dead serious. I tell my wife coming home, this is one reason I never would have done it over differently. Our lifestyle never would have been the – you could be the number one local news anchor in New York City and absolutely have no impact whatsoever. Your lifestyle might not nearly as good as lifestyles here are in a community of this size. I mean, so there have been some opportunities to do some things in bigger cities like Chicago. We just decided for us, because she's a teacher, my wife, and she's good and she's been at it a long time, we just decided our lifestyle lifestyle of raising a family here just fit for us and worked very well. Plus, we can still go travel. We like to travel. We, you know, the older you get, you do things. I think the older you get through 50 years, when you start out, you got all the answers. You know, and I look at that today. Yeah. The ones in the business, they got all the answers. To me, the older you get, the more you know what you don't know. But you do get a little bit more adept at asking the right people for the answer, so that you got to, at least in my case, that's the way it is. I also think you don't think you, I don't think you take yourself nearly as seriously, and I don't think the battles you fought early in the 50-year run are nearly what they are today, because today, the things that might have used to upset me don't upset me at all anymore. I'm just glad if I feel well the next day and my health is enough so I can come in and do the show the next day.
I agree. And the recently passed Ted Lindsay put it, I'm told, as if you've got your mind and mobility, you've got everything. But Tim, based on everything we've talked about now, what's your advice for the young people at MSU or wherever who want to get into broadcasting or journalism?
Well, I feel bad about that because for the last several years, you know, I got a very nice award from the MSU School of Communications, a Distinguished Alumnus Award several years ago. I never said any word about it. I said, you guys can promote this any way you want. But I was grateful for it. And I, you know, the 3 days that we were all together, because there were a couple of other award winners from around the country, and they, part of the 3 days of that was to visit with students. And then they always asked me to go visit on career day. And Michigan State draws well in its communication school, to my surprise, from all over the country. I mean, I spoke at a couple of career days, and some of those in the audience came as far away as Hawaii. And I said, why are you here? Why, there are a lot of schools you could have picked before Michigan State. Well, you know, the communication school is really good. And I get all that. The problem I had was that when all of them, who obviously are probably in debt, paying tuition, paying the cost of living fees and everything else that goes with college today, that, and they're looking keenly, you know, how did you do it and how does that work for us? The way I did it could never happen anymore. I mean, I'm a dinosaur the way this thing has all worked out. Because like you say, 50-year runs in anything are very difficult to do. So I'm reluctant to even go to career days because I had this discussion with a couple of the top journalism people at Michigan State. I mean, they say to me, oh, you know, I said, what do you want me to tell them? Oh, you know, the future's bright and all that. Well, if you look at the media world today, much like other industries, I mean, are we going to have printed newspapers next year? Are we going to have television news the way we know it? I mean, I can tell you that in television news, like everything else, you know, these companies are trying to, you know, they're trying to pare the health insurance down and pare the payroll down, even though they might have viewership and advertising and do well. I mean, they don't want that to lose. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is I don't really have a lot of good advice because I don't know where the industry is going to go relative to this saying, well, you know, you take this job first and then this job will come second, and this will come third, and by the time you've been in it 10 years, you'll be making six figures. I can't promise that, especially now, because this is an iPhone media-conscious world. Every place I went, used to be you'd go to New York and you see 92,000 newspaper stands on the corners with 50 newspapers to buy, and everybody's buying them. Now all you see are people reading iPhones. Even people you don't even think know how to work the things are reading an iPhone. To me, that's where it's headed. But who's going to put that in there and what those people who put that information in the iPhones are going to get paid, I have no idea.
Well, Tim, thanks for reflecting a bit with us. Congratulations on 50 years, and here's to however many more you want to keep doing.
I owe a lot to Michigan State for that. Through that, I always enjoyed being around Michigan State, and I hope there's a year 51 to talk about it, too.
That's Tim Stout, affectionately known as the Dean of Sports in Mid-Michigan, and I'm Russ White. This is MSU Today.